Mini episode 97 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome again to the FDH Lounge. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you today. Very, very special mini episode lined up for you. We're jumping on a very timely story and one where we were able to leverage some personal connections to be able to get some insight on what is presently going on. I'd like to start by just painting a picture here. This is almost a true-to-life type situation. For anybody that watches the show Justified, it's one of the best dramas on TV today. It's on FX on Tuesday nights. It surrounds the concept of the Wild Wild West, but set in 21st century rural Kentucky. And it's a show that creator Elmore Leonard from the novels set up U.S. Deputy Marshal Raylan Givens as a figure dealing with the Wild West that it's in today's rural America. And this is the week's episode actually dealt with, coincidentally, for what we're about to talk about today, a sheriff's race where two local drug kingpins were backing different sides. There's a lot of dirty tricks going on because of everything that's involved in that. We find ourselves in a real-life situation here, and this is what we're going to be talking about today, just a little shade north of where Justified is set, a little bit north on Interstate 75, right up the road there. We have a real-life Wild West situation right now, and a little bit of whodunit, as long as we're talking genres and as long as we're mixing literary metaphors here. We have talked about in the past previously on the program, and this is going way back, actually. One of the original dignitaries in the FDH Lounge, one of our original cast members, Nate Noy, has had longtime connections to a congressional candidate down there, David Krikorian, who was running in the Democratic primary this time around. Both Nate and David have been longtime critics of the incumbent Congresswoman Jean Schmidt, who ironically did not make it out of the Republican side in the Super Tuesday primary. She herself was upset. Everybody was thinking we were going to get another Krikorian-Schmidt brouhaha in the fall, and that is not going to be the case, at least on her side. Dave is in a tight one right now. It's a recount. It's going to it. He's slightly behind. There are votes to be recounted, provisional votes to be counted. But it's the circumstances of how we got here and how Dave has been upset to this point in time by a no-name who never lifted a finger, who never did a thing, who never put anything into the race. And then the last weekend of the race, a super PAC or an alleged super PAC, this new creature, this new entity that has evolved under federal elections law, somebody representing themselves as a super PAC, but with no registration and no nothing, which is highly illegal, by the way, dumped a whole ton of robocalls on him, negative robocalls on Dave toward the end. And that had to be a factor to tilt the race. As close as it is right now, the race is almost a virtual tie, again, with Dave trailing slightly. So the question, of course, arises as to motive in this circumstance. And it's a very, very, very tangled web. There are suspicions that are being cast in a number of different directions. And the national media is actually starting to weigh in on this. There's been some coverage from USA Today, from the Huffington Post. We understand the Wall Street Journal has something that's going to be forthcoming on the race. So a chance to talk to David Krikorian personally about this matter is going to be very, very valuable and get his thoughts as to what's going on. And really, the up-to-date news as we're seeing it. It's really a believable story because in this day and age, it is so, I can't underline enough, it is so highly, blatantly illegal for any entity to involve itself in a race, and I understand with the super PACs out there, and people are still kind of wrapping their heads around what this means, and it's really kind of a silly permutation of the law whereby a super PAC can spend untold amounts of money on a single candidate, but the provision is that they may not have any coordination with the candidate. So the ultimate irony in all of this is the Mr. Anonymous, who was running against David Kerkorian here, in all likelihood probably is clean on this matter. If he's not clean, he's probably going to jail because you can't have anything to do with this. But this is already an illegal operation. Whoever did this, whoever dumped these illegal robocalls on David Kerkorian has violated probably numerous aspects of federal campaign finance law. And the numbers, as we understand it, I was involved in a little bit of the research and going through that with Nate. Found out the weekend that this happened, it traced back to, I believe it was a cell phone in the Kirtland, Ohio area, which is actually up near where I live in northeastern Ohio. This happened in southwestern Ohio. So with an effort here in Ohio, obviously it was a kayfabe effort having it go to a cell phone in Kirtland, so we don't quite know what that entailed as to how that was used. That was obviously a piece of the scam here. Bottom line is, once this investigation gets going, especially once the Justice Department gets involved, once the federales got their fingers squarely in this thing, we can get into subpoenaing the phone records and finding out exactly what happened. But this is a very tangled web, as I started to allude to. Suspicion has been cast in the direction of Jean Schmidt and some of her Republican allies, who were supremely confident that they were going to win their primary, and were supremely confident that they were going to face David on the other side. So there have been some suspicions cast in that direction. Other elements of the Democratic Party could potentially be thought to be involved. Down in Pike County, Gene Schmidt has some allies amongst the Pike Democratic officials down there. They're all allies on the issue surrounding the local nuclear power plant, showing again that politics can make strange bedfellows. So was this a little bit of fragging coming from within the Democratic ranks on behalf of Gene Schmidt? Were there other potential rogue elements involved that nobody's even really put their fingers on yet? Again, this is such a unique circumstance. This is such a unique set of matters that are going on here, things that have come to pass. And again, we want to thank Nathan Noy so much, our good friend and one of the original cast members of the program, not merely for keeping us up to date with this program on what's happening with the matter, but also setting up the phone call that we are just about to pass through. And that would be a gentleman that he has worked with fairly extensively over a period of time. And so then that has given him a tremendous insight as to what's going on with this campaign and the post-primary scandal that we are talking about here today. So without any further ado, I will welcome to the program Mr. David Kerkorian. David, welcome to the FDH Lounge. Good to have you on, sir.
Hey, how are you?
Fine, thanks. How are you, David?
No complaints. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate your time.
Well, it's a pleasure to do so. I understand that this is getting a tremendous amount of national media scrutiny. Thus far, USA Today, and Huffington Post, other outlets, I believe Reuters, have weighed in on this. I understand there's going to be something forthcoming from the Wall Street Journal. So why don't we just start with what the latest developments are as we stand here midweek, the week after Super Tuesday.
Well, okay. I think first off, the U.S. Attorney's Office in the state of Ohio has requested that the Federal Bureau of Investigation conduct a preliminary investigation into the robocalls that were designed and used to basically to help my opponent in the Democratic primary win the election. Now, this is an opponent who there was really no sign of him at all on the campaign trail. I'd never seen him and still haven't seen him in person. But all of a sudden, mysteriously, I mean, this gentleman never campaigned at all by his own admission. And then all of a sudden, 4 days before the primary, a substantial number of robocalls come out in two parts. The first part was to talk about William Smith as the real Democrat, and then in that same call, sort of go after his opponent, but they never named me by name. So they just said William Smith, the real Democrat. And then on Monday and Tuesday, election day, the second batch of robocalls were along the lines of vote for President Obama, vote for Senator Sherrod Brown, and vote for William Smith for Congress because he's the real Democrat in the race. And then it never names me as his opponent, but it says some disparaging things about, that would make a Democrat want to potentially vote against William Smith's opponent. So it was well crafted, and it certainly wasn't done by the opponent, by my opponent, I should say. And we believe it had a substantial material impact because the race itself was very low turnout. There wasn't much reason for Democrats to turn out. There were very few contested races at all. In fact, in my own ballot, there were only two races. And by the way, at my house, we did in fact get the robocalls, so that were promoting William Smith. So where it stands right now is there's a preliminary investigation underway that hopefully will lead to the origination of these robocalls. They haven't been able to find anything. And I think the interesting thing here for your listeners is that whoever did this went to great lengths to conceal their identity. The disclaimer on the robocall says that the call is being paid for by the Ohio Victory Super PAC, or the Victory Ohio Super PAC, excuse me. And it lists a phone number, but the phone number is a dead line in that there's nothing on the end of that line. It's a Verizon account, we've been able to determine, but they're going to try and find out who was the previous owner and if there's any connection to that. But you have this situation where whoever placed the calls wanted to be anonymous, and we know that because a search of the federal database and the state database by multiple folks, including members of my campaign, we cannot find any trace of this super PAC that clearly was trying to have a last-minute impact on our election, and in fact did. So it's important to get to the bottom of it because there may be violation of federal laws as well, too, because if a super PAC has an expenditure greater than $1,000, that expenditure has to be disclosed, and you have to be a registered super PAC in order to make that call legally. So you could see a situation where if they find out who this individual or entity is, that they may have in fact violated federal statute. And if you do a fairly quick and easy Google search, you'll find that there are situations across the country where robocalls have been employed in a way to suppress the vote or use some kind of mechanism, as we've seen in this particular race, and the prosecutors are going after them. There's a very high-profile case in Maryland right now where robocalls were used on election day to suppress voter turnout. And I believe the two gentlemen who were involved, the two political operatives were involved. One has already been sent to federal prison, and the other one is awaiting. And I believe that's the case, and you can find that out online. But so that's where we are with respect to that. Now, on the election itself, there's about 600 ballots that are left to be counted. These are ballots that may come from military and overseas Americans. They may come from absentee ballots that had been requested but not yet turned in as of election day. You know, somebody drops it in the mail the day before. So those have to be counted, as well as all of the provisional ballots. So in total, there's between 500 and 600 ballots that are Democratic to be included in the total. And the total right now, separation is 59 votes on about 20,061 total votes. So 600 on that is a fairly significant number. And, you know, we'll see how that turns out. The other part two of that is, once those, other ballots are counted, depending on what the final outcome is, if it's where it is right now, or if it gets closer or goes the other way, there will be an automatic recount. And that process, I'm really actually not familiar with how long that process takes, but that's a mandatory recount. We would never call for a recount, you know, on our side, but if it falls within the mandatory recount level, then the state automatically has to do that as a function of following the law.
Absolutely, and it's very interesting with the two separate cases, as you indicated here, that once this gets resolved, as far as finding out who did this with the robocalls, it unfortunately does not involve an automatic remedy vis-a-vis the election results themselves. Something that you had mentioned specifically about the $1,000 limit that the super PACs are under, from having done a little bit of research myself, it was unlikely from what I had gleaned that this could have been done for under $1,000 when you're breaking down the average price of one of these calls here. So it seems like it raises a separate set of questions here too, in terms of the legal defense of whoever gets caught for this. You got to think that's the first thing they're going to say, oh, it was under $1,000. But it would seem to me that might fall under some kind of illegal in-kind contribution if these things are being parceled out for, say, 1/10 of a penny per phone call.
Well, one, I think first off, people have to consider that it's not just the act of, like, for example, if I were to go on television, any political ad that, you know, President Obama buys or your local senator or whatever, the ad cost has two components to it. There is a creative cost, which designs and creates the messaging for the ad, and then there's the placement of that ad itself. So I think you can get tripped up if you just kind of look at, oh, gee whiz, robocalls are only 3 or 4 cents a minute or however they're priced. You've got to look at it from the standpoint of it was probably done by an operative or a consulting group. There was probably a contract for services in place. The actual robocall itself has a female voice, sounds very much like a professional voice. So, you know, you can find out what the talent charge was for that. I mean, it's not just as simple as, hey, it's, you know, 3 cents times, you know, X 10,000, you know, phone calls or what have you. I think they're there in terms of that limit just with the phone calls alone. But, you know, I think what we'll find out if this investigation uncovers the original source, and I think it will, that there's more cost associated to it than just the cost of actually placing the ad. You know, you have to design the ad. Somebody has to come up with the messaging. And I will point out just a couple of interesting tidbits. If you look at the messaging, Representative Schmidt did an interview with WLW-TV in Cincinnati and a couple of weeks ago, and it's on their website. And if you listen to what she says in that interview, there's a portion of it where she talks about me. And the talking point that she uses about me is almost verbatim the talking point that the robocall uses against me. So there could be a messaging component in there. I have no idea. It's pure speculation on my part. But clearly somebody didn't want me to win the Democratic primary. And, you know, there's a relatively small universe of who that might be.
True. And we were running through, of course, before we patched you through, some of the extensive threads involved in this circumstance and the last couple of years leading up to it. And the one thing that I didn't have a chance to get to yet is perhaps the most interesting let's just say at a bare minimum coincidence of them all, because of course in your previous run against Representative Jean Schmidt, the issue of Turkey had come up. She's been one of the primary water carriers for them in Congress, and that's been a big issue between the two of you, and settled in a couple of different venues here. Yeah, it emerges that she was so supremely overconfident in her own primary that on Election Day she was actually in D.C. Dining with representatives of the Turkish government. So at a bare minimum, it gives you something to chew on here. It's hard to believe a foreign government could be so stupid as to be involved in this. But at the end of the day, David, somebody was so stupid as to do something that is blatantly illegal and for which there will probably be severe penalties when they're caught.
I don't disagree with anything that you just said. I mean, it is really quite amazing. And you also have to consider this. Representative Schmidt in the 2010 primary did interfere with the Democratic primary. She came out about 6 days before the Democratic primary election in May of 2010 and slanderously libeled me as a racist, saying that I had said some racist things at a meeting, never mind that she wasn't at that meeting, and never mind that, you know, many of the folks who were at that meeting came out and said that I didn't say anything even remotely close to that, what she had claimed. But nevertheless, that ran as the story. And 5 or 6 days before the last election, you know, we were completely slimed by her because she didn't want to face me in the 2010 general election. So she was able to engineer my defeat in the Democratic primary, and that's well known. Her letter is well known, and that was a complete farce. And I think, you know, it's very reasonable to assume that if she was not concerned with winning her primary at all on Election Day, she's in D.C. Come to find out earlier this week, her D.C. meeting, as you mentioned, was with the Turkish ambassador to the United States. She clearly did not think that she was in a position where she might lose her primary election. And, you know, I mean, she was probably concerned to a certain degree with, you know, who her November primary election was going to be. She was on a local talk show here in Cincinnati, WLW, last week on the Billy Cunningham radio show. And she commented that she ended the campaign with some money in the bank, and that she had asked Representative Boehner what she should do. And she said on TV that Representative Boehner told her to hold on to her money for November. Okay.
Right.
So she was not thinking that she clearly was thinking she was going to win, and I believe she was clearly thinking that I was going to win. And just based off of her previous history of meddling in the Democratic primary so she could get the weaker Democrat, which she got last time too, you know, it's certainly plausible that she could be behind it, or one of her operatives could be behind it. I mean, we don't know. It's purely speculation on my part.
Well, absolutely. It all is speculation at this point. That's what makes for a very fascinating whodunit until such time as the authorities are able to get anywhere. In our remaining few minutes allotted, an interesting thread of what you were just saying there, the previous race in 2010, of course, that being contested in the previous 2nd Congressional District, this one being post-census. It's the first time around in the new boundaries here. What's interesting is that Representative Schmidt was defeated in her primary, also with the help of Super PAC money, albeit completely legal and above board. Whatever else we might think about the Super PAC laws these days, the folks who weighed in, I believe there was a lot of Tea Party influence in that, they did so legally and above board, but it caught her by surprise. So the whole notion that, again, she had her own matter to deal with, she ended up losing. I think the one thing that everybody can concur from this thing, from the advice from the speaker to her, to her whereabouts on Election Day, to everything on down, she didn't see it coming. So any defense by any of her supporters along the lines of, you know, she had her own business to take care of, she had other fish to fry, the one thing we can say for sure, David, is that she didn't see it that way.
I think that's as logical as you can get. I mean, why would you, if you, you know, assuming she wanted to hold on to her seat, okay, assuming she wanted to remain in Congress, that's logical, and I believe she wanted to remain in Congress. But another interesting little side note is the House Ethics Committee, which ruled last year that she had accepted nearly $500,000 in improper gifts from the Turkish Coalition of America to fund multiple lawsuits against me over the last couple of years. Okay. You know, she had taken money from the Turkish lobby. And the House, and I filed a complaint against her with the Office of Congressional Ethics requesting a congressional investigation. And sure enough, they did do a congressional investigation and they found that she had accepted $500,000 from, in essence, the Turkish lobby for nothing more than coming after me, from a legal perspective and trying to ruin me financially, politically, so on and so forth. So, you know, if they're willing to do that, you know, why wouldn't they be willing to do other kinds of things to make sure that I don't get elected? I mean, again, purely speculation. They may have absolutely nothing to do with it, but the precedent is there. I mean, she has a $7 million defamation lawsuit pending against me right now, which is entirely frivolous. She brought it 2 years ago, and she's never done a thing to try and bring the case. She's done everything to try and stall discovery in the case and everything to try and, you know, she just wanted to have a lawsuit going against me to, you know, to make, you know, your life a little miserable and to cause you to spend a lot of money. And she's got the Turkish lobby paying for that over the course of the last several years. So, and then as a reward, Congress, in their infinite wisdom, the Republican leadership in 2011, January, guess what committee Schmidt shows up on? She's the single largest recipient of Turkish PAC money since 2008, more than any other representative in the or senator in the entire country. Needless to say, there aren't any Turks who live in our district, so to speak. I mean, there's a few, but not many. She becomes the single largest recipient of Turkish money, Turkish PAC money, and sure enough, in January of 2011, despite there already being two members of Ohio on the 50-member House Foreign Affairs Committee, Ohio adds another member to that committee. Want to take a guess as to who it was?
Yes, Jean Schmidt.
Jean Schmidt. And not only that, she's on the subcommittee for Eurasian Affairs. And that would be the one that looks at the Turkish the area, the Middle East, and obviously Eurasia. So, I mean, you know, you couldn't write it if it wasn't, you know, I guess what's the saying? Fiction is stranger than fact, I guess, or the other way around, I mean. But
I guess so. And we'll bring it full circle on that note, having alluded at the very top to Elmore Leonard and about how this is even great. Some of the fictionalizations that he's putting out these days, and the note about Jean Schmidt serving on those committees, probably more than a little bit reminiscent of the time that I believe it was North Korea that was appointed to the Human Rights Panel for the United Nations here, when you're letting Jean Schmidt monitor some of the Turkish actions in Congress. But, David, we appreciate getting the chance to catch up with you today, sir. We'll be keeping an eye on this thing as it moves along here, this case, and we'll be interested in talking to you further as events warrant.
Okay, thank you very much, and have a wonderful evening.
Thank you so much, Dave. Appreciate it. All right, this has been another very special mini edition of the FDH Lounge. We want to thank David Krikorian for coming on with us today to discuss the unfolding scandal.